This program is brought to you by PrideNZ.com.
I grew up in New Plymouth. And what else do you want me to say?
How long were you in New Plymouth for?
Until I was about 17, and then I went to Auckland University for a couple of years there, and then moved to Wellington, and I've been here since about 1986 or 7 or so, yeah. Okay. So I've been in Wellington longer than I've been anywhere else.
Yeah. And when you were growing up in New Plymouth, were you at girls' schools or mixed schools?
Well, obviously mixed schools in primary and intermediate, but an all-girls school at high school, yep.
And how was that for you?
I was okay because I had brothers, so I kind of always had guys around me and they weren't a big deal, whereas some of the girls, it was sort of like, wow, there's a boy, you know, it was a kind of a big deal. But the other thing is that my dad was a teacher at the high school and he's quite an eccentric character. So, yeah, that was kind of interesting when people found out that my father was, you know, Mr. Little and, yeah, and so I couldn't really be too naughty at school. He retired when I was in my seventh form, and that's probably when I started to be naughtier. Yeah.
What were you involved in at school? Were theatrics or?
I think I was in a couple of school plays, but mostly kind of sports things. So I was big into hockey and what else? Volleyball and athletics, maybe? Yeah.
And when you went to Auckland, what did you go to study?
I think it was drinking mostly. Well, it was back in the day when there were no student loans or student schemes. So, you know, we got paid a student allowance and didn't have a student loan. So, and it was a bit of party central. It was out of New Plymouth, which was a interesting town to grow up in, you know, not a lot to do, not a very diverse kind of little city. So, you know, being away from home for the first time was like, wow, look at this world out here. And then doing things like sociology at university, it was like, wow, this, you know, there's different ways of thinking. And so I did a BA in English because that's what all my friends were doing and that's what you did back then. But I really enjoyed the humanities more than, and I did better at that than, you know, English literature and all that sort of stuff. I hated English, actually.
Right.
Yeah, funnily enough.
And were you out in Auckland?
No, but all of my friends were telling me I was a lesbian, although I did have boyfriends. So, yeah, it was quite interesting. I had this guy, one of my friends at university, said that I dressed like a feminist, butch feminist lesbian. And I was quite taken aback, partly by that, but also quite chuffed and secretly. And I also saw the Top Twins for the first time in my life busking on Queen Street. And they sort of gave me this knowing look, and I was kind of looked behind me like, who are they looking at? Oh, me. and seeing them was just amazingly life-changing. I used to go and hunt them down on Queen Street just to look at them and just think, wow, you know, you can be like this in the world, and it's really cool. Yeah.
And you came out then?
No, I didn't. No. I had some disastrous relationships with boys until I got to Auckland, to Wellington, and then finally left this terrible relationship. And we just thought I need to be on my own for a bit. There's something going on here that's not, you know, kind of working for me. And then I don't know how I kind of got inveigled into the lesbian community. I think I started working at the National Library. That's right. And the wonderful Glenda Gale was around. And there were lots of lesbians at the library, surprisingly enough. And so I kind of gravitated towards them and then got invited to a woman's dance at the university, which I was nervously excited about until I went and I thought, well, this is ridiculous because there are men here, but they weren't men. So, and I just, it felt like, you know, this sounds really cliche, but it felt like home, you know, that I'd found where I was meant to be, yeah.
What sort of age were you?
23 or 4? Yeah, 23, I think.
Okay. Yeah. And so then what did you get involved in the lesbian scene in Wellington?
Mostly drinking, no. Makes me sound really bad, doesn't it? I was doing a master's in recreation and leisure studies, so I was really into kind of, you know, recreation-y type things. And so one of the first things I did was organise a recreation festival for lesbians, and it was back in the day when there were lesbians and then there was everybody else, and we were really into reclaiming or claiming our space and our identity. So separate to being, you know, women or feminists, we were lesbians. And I think there was a real, it was an interesting time because there was the separatist movement, which was all about, you know, hating men and denouncing any kind of, you know, straightness and all that kind of stuff. But there was also New Age philosophy, which was all about getting in touch with your inner child and all that kind of stuff. So it was a kind of really weird, I had these amazing arguments and conversations with lesbians who were saying baby boys should be put, you know, should be killed at birth, and because they're all going to be rapists and blah, 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 and women who have ever had sperm in their bodies can never identify as lesbian and all this sort of stuff. And so, you know, the conversations would be around, you know, well, that's kind of a Nazi way of thinking and, you know, extremist, and how does it benefit us as a community and blah, blah, blah. And then on the other side, we were, you know, weeping tears for our misspent childhoods and, you know, like getting in touch with crystals and weird stuff.
Not your scene.
It was a very confusing, mixed up time, but it was an interesting time in terms of, I think, the movement, you know, like for queer or for lesbians. And it's kind of, you know, we look back at it now, I look back at it now and I kind of laugh and think, oh, but I also understand how important that time was, because I think, you know, lesbian visibility was something that was so important, and things have changed now. I'm kind of torn, because I do think sometimes I think lesbian visibility is something that we don't see. Yet, you know, things have changed. I think the younger generation have made it far more kind of tribal, so it's not just, you know, separatist kind of communities that we're working together, and yeah.
So you were talking about the 1990s.
Yes, the 1990s.
Yes, yeah. I remember those. Yeah. I think we were in the same circles around then. Yeah. Were you living in a lesbian flat or?
Yep. I sort of lurched from monogamous relationship to monogamous relationship, and of course, you know, being a lesbian, moved in after a few months. Oh no, actually not all of them. But yeah, flatted with lesbians and then lived with girlfriends and yeah.
And you were one of the women's self-defense teachers. Yes.
I gave it a go. Part of my thesis when I was doing my master's was around looking at recreation programs that aim to empower young women, and so I followed Jenny Morgan around doing self-defense, and she's one of my heroes, by the way, and I just recently told her that, so I hope she doesn't mind. And got really, really interested and involved in it. So I did the learning. I didn't really finish, you know, I didn't get fully qualified as such, but I did run some courses for young women who were doing modelling school. And it was a school holiday program for, you know, schoolgirls that wanted to get into modelling. And it was a modelling agency, which I thought was a really great thing, that they included self-defence as part of the training. And so I was working at the council at that time, and would just pop up there at lunchtimes in the school holidays and run this hour-long session. And years later, I'd have these young, you know, gorgeous young women coming up to me and saying, oh, I remember you, you did the self-defence course, it changed my life, and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, it made me think even an hour of this stuff really makes a difference to people, yeah.
And I remember you getting in touch with me, I can't even remember the year now, but it must be like 12 or 15 years ago, and it was for us to all meet up, I think it was at Pound. Mm-hmm. During the day,
yeah,
which is really weird, but at Pound Nightclub,
yeah.
And to discuss this thing, this phenomenon called drag kinging.
Yes.
Yeah. Can you? What sparked that for you?
Oh, I think I'd been to, you know, like I was going to Pound and watching the drag queens and loving what they did, but I've always been one of those, I've always looked and thought, why aren't women doing things? Why, you know, like I mean, things like skateboarding. Why don't more women skateboard? All that sort of stuff. So I'm thinking, why don't lesbians do this stuff? What, you know, there are so many talented lesbians. Kathy Sheet, you know, there was all, you were doing stuff. There was all sorts of other people that were, you know, performing. And I thought, let's do something together. And I think one of the things I'd always wanted to do was, like, looking at boy bands and thinking, imagine some really hot dykes doing that stuff. And so I sort of handpicked a few people that I knew were already performing, and you were one of them. And I think that was because you'd won the Miss, what was it? Wellington, or was it called? Was it called the Miss Separatist Lesbian? No. So, and you know, people were raving about how great you were on stage and that sort of stuff. And you've always been, you know, out there and doing MC sort of stuff.
Okay, so you got a few of us together. Thanks.
Yeah, yeah. So there was, I think there's about six of us, because then people told their friends and flatmates, and it kind of grew from there. And of course we had to have a meeting about it. We couldn't just do stuff. But really part of that for me was about getting the mandate, you know, that we could do something, like we could organise something together. Yeah.
Now this is pre-internet, really, eh?
Yeah.
So where did you find out about the Drag King stuff?
I don't actually know.
Magazines or a trip to Australia or anything like that?
Must have been from magazines, like you know, like the English Diva and all that sort of stuff. They probably, yeah, I don't know, Drag Kings.
Because now we can YouTube it and you can see lots of stuff going on overseas and their websites dedicated to it and so on. But really at that time we didn't have anything to go off, eh? Yeah.
I mean, it was happening overseas, you know, the States were quite big on it. And so, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I just looked at the drag queens and thought, why aren't chicks doing, women doing this stuff?
So in terms of our own research about it, it was really about us coming up with exactly that stuff. And calling it the Drag Kings, well, we were really fortunate because we could just grab the name.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was kind of like a brand that we'd just grabbed and used, yeah.
So that group went for, what, off and on now anyway, for 12 years? Or
12, 13 years or so, yeah.
And can you remember the first shows and what we put into some of those first shows?
Yes.
Without talking about Cotton Eye Joe.
No, I'm not going to go there. I'm still traumatised by that one. I remember We Will Rock You, which took forever to get the moves right, and they were quite, yeah, anyway. But we did, you know, boy band stuff, really, just parodying boy bands and being characters. So the first show we ever did was at Pound, and that was in 2001, I think. Yeah. I've still got the posters. So I've kept some archives of that, and I have actually gifted it to Lagans on my demise. And then we did our first full show at Blue Note. Yeah. And I still remember the opening number was one I did, which was I'm a Woman. And so I was dressed up as, you know, in this glittery, sparkly frock, and I had my backup boys. I loved it. Yeah.
Oh, we got a pretty good crowd in all those shows, I remember.
Yeah, we had quite an amazing following, actually. And even to this day, you know, people are saying, oh, when are the Drag Kings going to do stuff again? And, you know, that people still remember us quite fondly, yeah.
Tell us about some of your main characters.
I really like parody. Like, I like looking at how people perform and how they, you know, like, people like Tina Turner has got such a distinctive sort of style about her, and has also been done a lot by drag queens. So I thought, well, I'd love to do her, you know what I mean. And one of the highlights of doing a performance of her once was somebody coming up to me afterwards and saying, I could have sworn you were a drag queen. So that whole thing of being a woman dressing up as a man dressing up as a woman. It was kind of like this, yeah, I was delighted. And then I love doing boy characters, you know, like boy band characters that are kind of, you know, with the little goatee and the piercings and that kind of look. And there's something about doing that stuff that you do start to create a whole persona around it and start to become, more aware of your own masculinity, I guess. And part of that, I think, is, you know, in our society, masculinity is very much tied up in confidence and self-confidence. And so that's, you know, like, I felt like I got a lot of sort of, yeah, confidence around doing that stuff.
Are there characters that you still want to do?
Yeah, actually, my sister's partner and his 30-year-old son from a first marriage and my 14-year-old nephew came down to Wellington on Friday to go to the Billy Idol concert. And so I drove them into town and drove them back again, and all the way we had Billy Idol just rocking the car. And so I came home and Googled, you know, YouTubed him, and I thought, oh, yes, I so want to do Billy Idol. Yep, he's next.
Any particular song?
Rebel Yell. Oh, yeah. That's the best. Awesome. Yeah, yeah.
Did you ever get any grief about the Drag Kings?
I think in the last few years there's been a bit of kind of mumblings about, you know, the binary kind of thing, that, you know, that we're not, I don't know, yeah. That's all, you know, the kind of political stuff, and that's cool. And I think as long as people are thinking about it, that's great. Let's start discussion. That's what art's about, you know. At a recent thing, I did Eminem number, which he starts off as being Eminem doing Cleaning Out Your Closet, and then ends up as Diana Ross going, I'm coming out. So it's, you know, stripping away of that kind of tough out exterior persona and actually being queer as fuck. And somebody posted a photo, and then somebody else posted a comment saying that ruined the night for him because Eminem's a homophobic twat and blah blah, all that sort of stuff. And, you know, they should have just stuck with, you know, not had my number in it. And at first I thought, oh, that hurt so much. And then I thought, no, this is great. This is really good because, A, I obviously was, you know, good at impersonating Eminem, which is great. They have kind of missed the point, but then a lot of people kind of came in and started defending and, you know, yeah, and discussing. And I thought, this is good. This is what it's about.
And the Drag Kings always did kind of set up a forum for discussion anyway in terms of what we were doing. Yeah. I mean, some people probably read us a little bit more deeply than we actually were, but
absolutely. Yeah.
And we went to Melbourne. Yeah. Yeah, do you want to talk about what it was for us in Melbourne that time?
It was a buzz to be involved in something that was, you know, sort of semi-international, I guess. And I was looking at some of the other acts there and thought, gosh, we're so different. We're quite unique in what we do, and that what the characters that we do, we try to tell a story. You know, we did a lot of group numbers, which you didn't see a lot of. I think the Melbourne ones were very much characters that they'd created, and they'd just be that character. So, and a lot of their stuff was very penis-oriented. There's a lot, you know, like it's like that's not the only thing about being male, I liked it that we sort of were ourselves, but with these different characters, yeah, and kind of playing, yeah.
Yeah, I remember us all kind of noticing that, because that was really the first time that we'd actually seen a whole lot of other drag kings at this extravaganza. Mm. And that pretty much every act ended up with that cock joke,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And we do that occasionally, but it's never been a real focus of what we've done, yeah. Mm. So, yeah, you set up this quite amazing thing for Wellington, and I've got to say, we did travel in New Zealand, so, you know, Littleton. And
yes, I know. We were big in New Zealand. I remember one of my highlights was actually the Top Twins coming to see us in Auckland, one of them. I think it was Linda, and I'd just done Tina Turner, and I came off the stage, and she was standing sort of by the aisle where we went into the changing area, and she was clapping and smiling, and she said, bloody gorgeous. And that was a highlight for me. I thought, wow, if she says that, must be good.
Yeah, you made it. Val, in the Butch on Butch photo exhibition, we took the photo of you in a music shop in town, and we've got a lot of albums behind you. Can you talk about the significance of that setting for you?
Music's always been a big part of my life. I mean, I suppose everybody says that, you know, sort of grew up with, you know, lots of different music in my house. I had an older sister and two older brothers and a twin. And so, you know, all had quite different musical tastes. And I mean, I have fond memories of rifling through records in the weekends, and there's something about records that had, you know, you had your artwork there as well, the covers. But I've always been, sort of moved and touched by music, and I used to pretend to be, you know, musicians, and it was kind of my happy place to go. And one of them particularly was Paul Simon. I wanted to be Paul Simon, so I was Paul Simon, and I would have conferences. So music's really important to me, and I love dancing, so, you know, yeah.
And you're a DJ.
I am a DJ, part-time DJ, yep.
And what's your DJ name?
My DJ name's DJ Bullitt, and that's spelled B-U-L-L-I-T-T, and it's a play on the fact that I'm a Taurus and little, L-I-T-T. But also, I was shot at the first time I ever DJed. Yes, yeah.
So, well, tell us about that.
So I'd been going to the Dudes Dances, which were the, you know, lesbian dances that were held monthly.
Dykes out of debt.
Dykes out of debt, yeah, that's right. Yeah, so the lesbian monthlies. And I always thought, oh, they should play this song or they should play that song. And I thought, look, put your money where your mouth is and offer to DJ, you know, if I think I'm that good, you know. So I did, and they said, yeah, come along, we'll do this, you know, this first one. And so I was, you know, like I was always listening to music when I was, you know, at home and all that sort of stuff, and always dancing. Like everything I do, I just dance. If I was doing the dishes, I was dancing. When I was coming out of the shower, I was dancing. So the music I listened to, I thought was great and really danceable. So I took along my little collection of CDs and realised that, actually, not everyone knows these songs, just because I do, and, you know, love dancing to them. And so it was, I was shit. I was actually quite shit. And didn't have a big collection, so I was kind of repeating some songs. Anyway, so I was, where the DJ booth was, it was right by the window, the road coming up. Yeah, but it was upstairs, and I was kind of like bending over to get a CD or something, and I felt something just whiz past my head, and I thought, that was weird. And that night was just disastrous. This very drunk woman came up and said, "Your music, shit, I'm going to bash you." Like, she actually had to be dragged out. I thought, looking back, I thought, I don't blame her. But, you know, it was a disastrous night. And so then on the Monday, I was reading the paper, and there was an article about some guys that had been driving up and down Courtney Place and Tory Street, which is where the thing was, shooting air pistols at bouncers and people in nightclubs. Yeah. So I rang the police and I said, look, I don't know, it might not be anything, it might be a coincidence, but I have a feeling I was shot at on Saturday night, blah, blah, blah. And so they investigated it. They went up to the nightclub and I got this letter from the police that said, we can confirm that the pellet that went past your head was from an air gun, blah, blah. The case is now closed. But I had this letter and it's like, wow, this is street cred, man. I've been shot at. I'm like a DJ who's been shot at. So that, then I thought, well, it has to be DJ Bullitt. Yeah.
kind of harrowing, but perfect as well.
Yeah, so I've actually got that letter. I will frame it one day.
So, Val, you've been on a recent holiday to Thailand or in the last year or so, yeah? And you went to stay or help out at a sanctuary for elements. Yeah. Can you tell us about your interest there?
It's something I've always, you know, it's one of those bucket list things, and I'd love to go and work on a sanctuary with wild animals, and love elephants, and, you know. And so it was a few years ago, a friend of a friend had been talking about that she had gone to the sanctuary. So I sat down and talked with her about how do you do it, you know, how do you do it? So she told me, and she gave me a name of a sanctuary. And then I thought, I'm going to be like the girlfriend of the century and shout my girlfriend, who also loves animals and is really passionate about animal welfare and, you know, preserving, you know, wild species and all that sort of stuff. I'm going to shout her for her birthday, a trip to Thailand, to this sanctuary. So it took months and months to do that, and I had to keep it a secret, and it was really, really hard. So I presented it to her on her birthday, and then we had to wait, because her birthday's October, mine's in May, so we were going on my birthday the following year. So we had to, this long wait and blah, blah. So anyway, and in the meantime, did lots of kind of like reading and research about just the whole kaupapa of, you know, sanctuaries and the treatment of animals in Thailand especially. And so, yeah, we went there for about 2 weeks volunteering, and it was absolutely exhausting, getting up at 6 o'clock every morning and working basically 12 hours on doing really physical stuff like scrubbing out, you know, pools where the bears would swim, you know, with little wire scrubbing brushes in the middle of the day in Thai heat. And, you know, it was, you know, and then feeding out like 600 animals, you know, through the day and all that sort of stuff. And learned so much about the plight of the animals, and also like the whole dichotomy of poverty and what that drives people to do. And, you know, so yeah. And then that sanctuary, was run by a guy who was a bit of a prick actually. And so some friends of ours that were working there, they were paid workers there, had a big falling out, and it was just, yeah, it was all pretty yucky, and he was doing some stuff behind the scenes that we didn't know about and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so we heard about this other sanctuary, which was pretty much, you know, very small and pretty much dedicated to elephants, run by an English woman. And so my partner and I just looked at each other and said, we're going. So we just planned to go on this trip, and it's just something that, you know, it fills my heart. I just, you know, I can't actually describe what it's like to actually be around these animals that, I mean, they should be in the wild, but they've been totally abused and, you know, exploited for tourists. And now they get to live the rest of their lives out and, you know, in freedom and comfort and, you know, being looked after. What blows me away is their resilience and just how that they actually trust human beings after what they've been through. And it kind of teaches you a lot about yourself and about other people and about the world. And yeah.
Was that in North Thailand?
The first one was south. The second one was kind of halfway between Chiang Mai and Bangkok. Yeah. Everyone should go. It's beautiful.
And have you stayed connected with them?
Yeah, absolutely. On Facebook. And, one of the guides there, this lovely woman, Marley, is, you know, we're friends. Like, I send her birthday presents and we're always chatting on Facebook. And, yeah, so.
Going back to the photo exhibition, do you want to say a bit about why you got involved in that?
It's funny because I actually feel a bit like a fraud in terms of, I don't know that I identify as butch as such. And then I sort of have to think about, is that kind of butch phobia? Is that, you know, like, what is that? The reason I wanted to get involved is I saw some fabulous photos from a woman in San Francisco, was that? Yeah. And just stunning photos of these, you know, supposedly masculine-looking women who identified as butch. And I thought, wow, I don't think I've ever seen anything quite like that. It was raw and it was real and it was just beautiful, actually. And somebody said to me, oh, there's somebody in there who looks like your doppelganger. And I had a look and I thought, wow, she's amazing. She's hot. Well, that's great. So when I saw that you were doing it, I thought, oh, look, I really want to support it. And, it's interesting because when I came out, you had to be one or the other. And if you were femme, or you had to be femme or butch, one or the other. If you were femme, you were quite marginalised, actually. And there was a lot of crap that kind of went around, you know, woman who did look straight, you know, I'm doing air quotes. But I've always identified as a tomboy, always. And So if there was, you know, there is a continuum. So I'm kind of at the boyish end of it, and androgynous and tomboy, and I've always been attracted to, not necessarily physically or sexually, but attracted to masculine kind of women. Yeah. And then it makes me think about what is masculine, and, you know, we all have both, or, you know, and all different shades of that stuff. So I thought, you know, it's good for me to do this sort of stuff, just to have more of a self-exploration, I guess. Yeah.